But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand there. There's power in a union.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is a special edition of The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for tuning in. In this special edition, what we're going to be talking about is, we know what's coming. We know the crisis that is coming in the labor movement. And it's something I talked about quite often during the 2016 election cycle. Look, you knew this case front and center was important when Antonin Scalia passed away back in February of 2016. There was a sigh of relief because the Friedrichs case was, deadlocked. That moment of relief, not long lived. We are now in a situation where I think we know what's coming. The Janus versus AFSCME case is something that the labor movement is going to have to deal with. And I thought during this special program, we talk about, one, what it is, what we expect to happen, and, what's going to have to happen outside of that. Personally, I'm a very lucky guy. In my lifetime, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. Because of the union card that I carried, because of that Teamsters card I had in my wallet for 20 plus years, I now live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers. And I want that path for my children and my grandchildren and everyone else's kids. The idea that, you work hard, you play by the rules, you get ahead is something we should absolutely be fighting for. And right now, like no other time in my lifetime, labor is under attack like none other. And that's why I've asked Michael Filler to come talk with us. He's the director of Public Services Division there at the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick, for creating this opportunity for us to have a national conversation with our Teamster brothers and sisters across the United States about the importance of the Janus case and what it means to public employees from coast to coast in the United States of America. This is a great opportunity for us to have this national conversation, for us to make aware what's at stake, and for us to begin to build and firm up our foundation through internal organizing and having important conversations between members and those non-member fee payers.
Now we know, I think beyond exception, we know what's going to happen. The Supreme Court has taken the Janus versus AFSCME case and a number of others. That's not the only attack on public sector unions right now, but we know that's the big one. And I think we can pretty much be, certain that the guy who was put into the Supreme Court seat vacant by Scalia's passing, someone who would have allowed a truck driver to die on the side of a highway, I got to think we're pretty clear on where he's going to stand, right?
Well, I think you're right about that. But on the other hand, we've got at least 40 years of Supreme Court precedent. And so for those Supreme Court scholars and constitutional scholars, that should count for something. Back in 1977, the case of Abood versus the Detroit Board of Education established the landmark case that said it was fine and acceptable and an American value to require these non-member fee payers to pay an amount related to the negotiation and enforcement of a collective bargaining agreement in the public sector. And it has remained the precedent for many, many years. And it wasn't until 2012 that we saw the first round of cases. So in 2012, in 2014, in 2016, these far right groups funded these lawsuits. And here we are in the end of 2017 with another one coming our way. So by June of next year, 2018, that issue will probably be decided. And as you point out, with the appointment of the newest member on the Supreme Court, it looks very well like the precedent is at risk. And so what we need to talk about today is, what will it be like? What will America be like the morning after? And what can we do in advance to prepare for really this Category 5 hurricane of change coming through the American labor movement?
And one of the things that keeps coming up to me is This is not something, this is not a groundswell of member activity. This is something that, one, you can go back to the Knox case with Justice Alito calling for this this kind of a case. You can look at the National Right to Work people who are heavily funded by big business interests pushing forward on this stuff. You know, this isn't something members and non-members wanted. This is something the wealth class wants.
There's no doubt about it. The wealthy want it. It's part of the playbook from the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, and it's out there. And people want to change the rules. The public sector is in the crosshairs because our membership penetration is five times greater than the private sector. And so they think that if they can do something to the public sector, to public employees who are unionized, they will have it all, and they can set the rules for the future. And so they can change wages, change benefits, and deregulate the whole American economy to their advantage. And so, you know, these corporate interests, the wealthiest 1%, will have their way unless we take this opportunity to firm up our house and to be Teamster strong.
And again, you know, as I said, you know, in that war between capital and labor that is never going away and has always been, this is another instance of capital winning. And, you know, my problem is once this goes, and there's part of me that still holds out hope that it doesn't happen, although the part of me that's rational and sane realizes that we're probably on this path. I look at the fact that this is going to create possibly a vicious spiral downward. This is a race to the bottom, a swirling down the drain, whatever you want to say. This could really harm all members by stealing, you know, valuable resources from unions to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions.
Well, there's no doubt about it that if these non-members aren't required to pay for the representation that they receive, they will be free riders. They will get it all for nothing. And that will strike at the resources that working people have pooled together when they unionize to say, we want to have a voice, we want to have a choice, we want to set the rules that govern our working conditions, and that will be sorely affected. And maybe the existing contracts will stay in effect, but the next round, post-Janus, labor will be in a different position financially, and it'll be very difficult to negotiate the best agreements in the country and to enforce them through arbitration procedures if we don't have those financial resources. And while this conversation that we need to have between members and non-members isn't focused on dues, below it all, people need to know that the great contracts that we've negotiated in the past will be at risk unless we firm up our foundation now. This is that golden opportunity. We can be prepared for the storm of change that will come in a post-Janus environment, but we need to act now. If we don't act now, we have no one to blame but ourselves, and that's what our national program is all about.
Right.
Our country and community campaign, which seeks to strengthen our resources internally through internal organizing, because we know that if we inform, inspire, and involve others, we will be much stronger than we are today, and we need to be prepared to undertake that activity immediately.
It really is all about being prepared, because look, we know it's coming, and it's not good. Let's go to the phone lines and find out what some of our listeners have to say. Let's go to line one, where we've got Kimberly on line one. Kimberly, thanks for taking time for us. Teamsters Local 117 out in Washington State. What's on your mind?
Well, I just have a problem with this whole right to work. I don't think everybody's getting as informed information as what they should. I mean, the whole idea of the concept of the right to work name is misleading. It doesn't guarantee employment for those that are ready, willing, and qualified. It rather diminishes the organization, such as unions. I think it's going to affect the workers, the wages, and the employment. It's already in right to work states has reduced the wages by at least $1,500 a year for the average worker.
Yeah, it's going to affect everyone. I think Dr. Martin Luther King said it best. You know, it comes with no rights, it comes with no work, and, you know, it's a scourge upon the civil rights movement and the labor movement. And again, you know, you going back to the 60s, they've really been, I give the right credit, Michael and Kimberly, they've stolen the language of workers, because we used to want a right to work. I'm not against the idea of someone having a right to a good job, a right to health care, a right to retirement. I'm not against that. That's not what this is. But what do you say to Kimberly's question there, Michael?
Well, to your point about the language that's used here, I mean, this is a political Ponzi scheme. And you know, this is going to be out there. It's going to mislead people to thinking that it's not what it's intended to be. And they don't realize it works against their interests and the interests of working families across the United States. And so we need to be on guard. And that's why we need to have those important conversations so people understand what right to work will mean. It will really disenfranchise working people across America, especially in the public sector. And the benefits that exist today will no longer be there years from now. And that will have a lasting negative consequence. And so our conversations are focused on that so people know what's at risk. And, you know, these right to work states, if you look at the numbers there, 12 of the top 20 right to work states in America have the highest unemployment. Somewhere over 2 million people are unemployed. So, you know, when people say and corporate interests talk about the ability to have the freedom to give people jobs, well, that's really not the case here. If you look at the 20 places with unemployment, and 12 of those states are these right to work for less states. And right to work is really the right to weaken working people.
Yeah, and on top of the unemployment part, you know, you go lower investments in education, higher child infant mortality, higher child hunger rates, you know, lower investment in, you know, go down the list, healthcare, education, infrastructure, all of that stuff, because you're basically stealing money from working people so that you can enrich, well, the already well-to-do. Kimberly, did that answer your question?
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, my whole thing is why are we even calling it a right to work when it's not a right to work? It's not a guarantee of any kind. So right. How is that deemed a right to work? That gives them the right to terminate anyone, which they already have the right to do. But they're saying it's to, you know, make it so people aren't required to pay these Stewart dues and shop dues or whatever, but there's already a federal law in effect that affects that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could call it the right to freeload bill. You could call it any of those things. At the end of the day, the language is what it is, and we've got to fight on certain terms, and you're absolutely right. I mean, they have co-opted the language. I appreciate the thoughts, though. Thank you.
Absolutely.
And she's got a point there. I mean, we fight a lot of things on the rights term. I mean, you talk about the death tax. Every working person should be in favor of an estate tax. Yet we've got, you know, people, truckers saying, let's do away with the estate tax. It's ridiculous.
Well, you know, on the tax question, Rick, I think, you know, maybe labor should support reduced corporate taxes, provided that it's part of a package. And that package should include a rollback on right to work everywhere where it exists today, number one, and number two, the right to freely collectively bargain over wages, benefits, and working conditions. Then we will have a level playing field. But without that, the 1% will have the advantage here.
Let's go to line two and let's see what Angela's got on her mind. Angela, are you there? Angela, you there?
I am.
You got a question for Michael?
Well, actually, we echo everything that Michael is saying and everything that you've said. The thing that bothers us most is this is a direct attack on union and organized labor by corporate America, and that's why the play on words, because they don't want unionized workers. They don't want, the employers do not want work safety. All of the things that unions have fought for years and years and years to obtain are crumbling around us legally through governors like Rick Snyder in the state of Michigan, where the birthplace of labor. So that's the thing that people don't understand. People misinterpret right to work for the play on words that Kimberly mentioned.
Yeah,
it's intentionally done.
That's an excellent point. And, you know, I often point to Pennsylvania workers' compensation law. In our law where I live in Pennsylvania, it still refers to the employer and the employee relationship as master and servant. I mean, and that's the mentality that they're going to take us back to. And Michael, you and I have had this conversation before about the idea that, you know, maybe we're going back to the future of the Lochner era and the whole liberty of contract nonsense, which we know what that ended up leading us to.
Well, you're absolutely right, because our opponents like to use the word freedom. They throw that around, that people should have the freedom to join or not join, depending upon their particular views. But, you know, what will happen post-Janus if this goes through and we have right to work in the public sector from coast to coast, we will no longer have the fairness that we negotiate for in our collective bargaining agreements. What this would set up would be a system of favoritism. And you know, if you get along with the boss, then maybe you'll get a day off and maybe you'll get a pay raise and maybe you'll get the overtime. And so we won't have the fairness and the balance that comes about when we negotiate a return on our work, because that's really what the collective bargaining process is all about.
Yep.
We have value and we want a return on that work by way of wages and benefits and fair working conditions. And that will all be swept aside. And the togetherness that we feel today that comes about through working people coming together in their unions will be washed aside for solo individual interests, and teamwork will no longer exist. And so that really threatens the society that we live in today. We don't live in caves like we did in, you know, many, many years ago in the Stone Age. We are a society of people. We have schools where people come together. We have stores where people shop. We have religious institutions where people pray, and that's where groups come together. Our society is based upon groups and working people coming together, not individual interests operating to their own advantage.
Yeah, and this is one of those, as I've been saying, this is a divide and conquer. This is an attempt to divide up the workplaces and pit people against each other for the sole purpose of enriching the handful at the cost of the rest of us. Angela, anything else you got on your mind for Michael?
No, Michael Filler is a great leader, and we enjoy working with him.
Good stuff.
We've learned so much from Michael, so we appreciate you, Michael.
Thank you, Angela.
Good stuff,
Have a
Angela.
Great day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the thoughts. But here's the thing. You know, I got an email from Finn Ross, who says, if Janice wins, and this is a question for you, Michael, if Janice wins this case, it sounds like unions will no longer be able to collect fair share fees from non-union members. Will that be automatic? Or will each state then have to pass its own laws outlawing fair share? That's a good question. Is this on the day that they decide, does automatically, like we saw in Wisconsin, automatically it just stops?
Well, I think that's what we can expect to happen. I'm not on the Supreme Court, but in a worst case scenario, the morning after, you know, all those deductions will probably stop, and public employers will be told to no longer collect that money, or if it is being collected, it'll have to be refunded to them through some type of a system. So I think the financial impact will be immediate, and you know, the effect on the collective bargaining process will probably come about once those existing contracts are no longer in effect. And so you know, there'll be a few different waves of change here, but I think the financial effects will be immediate.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary stuff. Let's go back to line one. We've got Jason Rabinowitz on the line. Jason, thanks for taking time for us. You got a question for Michael?
Well, I just want to thank Michael, and I'm with Teamsters Local 2010 in California, where we represent 14,000 public workers for University of California and Cal State. And I agree, this is all about greed. These billionaires and lawyers just want to weaken unions so they can lower wages and benefits and get richer. But the good news is that none of them are powerful enough to stop us from standing together in our union if we choose to do that.
Yes.
And in our union, we have thousands of our members have already signed up on our member power form that commits to stay a member of the union no matter what happens. And I believe if we all choose to stand together in our union, we're going to be strong. We're going to protect our wages and benefits. If we choose not to stand together, we're going to be weak, and they're going to lower our wages and benefits, just like they did in Wisconsin and Florida and Iowa.
Yeah.
But I think once our members understand that this is the key to our power and it is in our hands, we're going to stand together and we're going to be strong. We're going to be all right.
Now, let me ask you this. You know, in having a conversation with Michael yesterday on our radio program, Michael, we talked about the end of industrial peace and maybe what that meant, a more militant, my word, a more militant working class people who are going to, you know, not expect the union to do all the work for them, but actually out there willing to fight for themselves. I'm curious your thoughts on both what Jason and I here are saying.
Well, Jason and Local 2010 has done a tremendous job. Months ago, we had a strike at the University of California because, you know, the bargaining unit members were not being treated fairly through the collective bargaining process. And so we did come together. We were militant. We sent a strong message. And as a result, Jason and his team negotiated a fantastic agreement with the University of California. So I think you're right, Rick. It's going to take us going to the streets and to become active in ways that maybe public employees haven't done so much in the past. And we've seen a lot of that following the 2016 election. People woke up the morning after and they realized really what happened and who was elected the president of the United States. And so I think people are beginning to realize, unless they stand up and speak with one voice, that they will be stepped on. And the University of California example with Local 2010 is a perfect one where people did take it to the streets. We closed down highways and byways, and a strong message was sent. And as a result, a tremendous collective bargaining agreement was ratified by a high percentage of the membership.
Yeah, I remember. In fact, I think we had Jason on the program when that was going on. You got something else for Michael, Jason?
Well, yeah, Michael, I just want to thank you for your leadership in the Teamsters. And I just want to say, as we're saying to every union member out there and every worker out there, that, you know, these powerful forces are coming after us. They're trying to get richer and make us poorer. But we've got the power. The Supreme Court, these lawyers, none of them has the power to stop us from standing together if we decide to do that. And I think once our members come to understand that, they're gonna stand together. And you know what? There's a lot of non-union workers out there that are getting taken advantage of by employers, and they're going to want to be part of our movement too. So the time is now to come together and start rebuilding the union movement, because the future of our nation and all working people depends on it.
Well, let me ask both of you, because, you know, I've had this thrown at me a couple of times, that maybe, you know, and this is a kind of a far out thought, that maybe this isn't going to be a bad thing. Maybe this is actually going to be a good thing, and that the unions do become more more militant. They do reach out more, and, you know, they become more focused on on members, you know, satisfaction and better contracts and all that. I'm curious, Jason, first your thoughts.
Well, I think it's a bad thing. It's certainly aimed at destroying us, but it's one of those challenges that that will hopefully wake us up that we need to be building our unions. We can't be complacent, because I'll tell you, these employers, these corporations, they are never complacent. They spend 24/7 thinking about how to destroy the union movement, how to make workers poorer so they could be richer. So we've got to be just as active. We've got to every day be building our movement. And I'm seeing it all over the country that working people, young people, they're seeing that, and they're coming together to build a labor movement. The problem is, if we don't do it, it's not just a problem for union members. It's a problem for our whole country.
Yes.
Because when unions are weak, the economy is bad, the wages of working people goes down, it's bad for the whole country. So all people have an interest in our country of having strong unions, and workers having the right to stand together and get something fair for the hard work that we do.
Right there with you, Jason. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. What do you have to say, Michael?
Well, I think Jason's leadership and the California Teamsters in general has been tremendous all throughout that state. In many respects, they lead the nation in activism, but that's also true in other states like Minnesota, and even Pennsylvania. As you remember, Rick, a few months ago, we had over 1,000 Teamsters that came to Harrisburg to send a strong message to the legislature there that we were opposed to right to work. And people, you know, were there. They turned out from all over the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to send a strong message. And we've been working the halls in Harrisburg to let all those legislators know that we don't want right to work in Pennsylvania. And the same is true, I think, across the United States as we continue our campaign to educate our members of what's at stake here with Janus. You know, we need to carry this from coast to coast, and we need to make sure that we are even stronger than we are today as Teamsters.
Right. Now, this brings me to the idea of this internal organizing. You know, I've had conversations with Lee Saunders at AFSCME and Dave Philman at AFSCME Council 13 and a number of the AFSCME people who a lot of folks think, and in fact, you know, I got an email here from Kevin, who is a Kutztown University professor. He asks and says that, you know, some members that he's talked to, they think that Janus is only going to apply to AFSCME members. Only them, because it's Janus versus AFSCME. There's a thought that it's only them. But AFSCME's been doing a lot of internal organizing, as I know the Teamsters have. But, you know, again, some people think it's just going to be AFSCME.
No. This is a constitutional question as it relates to the public sector. And it's more than just AFSCME. And so that's what's really at stake here in this case. The far right, through the financial backing of the top 1%, is looking to overturn that Abood precedent from 40 years ago. So that's really what it's all about. And it's not just AFSCME, it's any union that represents public sector workers in the United States. And so it will have application everywhere in the United States.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this before, this being decided law. And John Roberts, the Chief Justice, during his confirmation, said he was a believer in stare decisis, decided law. He was going to call balls and strikes. This is way outside the strike zone, in my view.
Oh, yeah. And as you pointed out earlier, Justice Alito has been salivating. And so, you know, that day is coming where he'll have a big smile on his face, I guess, as he writes this next opinion. To overturn that 40-year precedent.
Yeah, a smile on his face while jabbing workers in the back. I'm angered and frustrated. Let's go to the phones. Kelly on line two, Teamsters Local 332 there in Flint, Michigan. Kelly, thanks for taking time for us. What's on your mind?
Thanks a lot. I'm scared because this is going to affect all of us working Americans. You know, thing is, Janus passed, and now it's going to go to private sector. I mean, it's like cutting the legs off the union workers. I'm young. I still have a lot more years to work, and it's hurting the middle class.
Absolutely.
I think the biggest thing is, like they said, we have to educate internally to our members to let them know what this is going to do, how it takes down the leverage, the bargaining power. Corporate America is just trying to kill the unions, and that's what they need to know. This equals less freedom, lower wages, and it puts our safety at risk. I'm in healthcare, and so it puts the safety at risk for not only me, but my patients as well.
Excellent point. Excellent point, Michael, because look, you know, once they take our voice away to have any say in wages, hours, and conditions, you know, our standard of living goes down, our ability to take care of our children goes down and you know, take care of ourselves in old age, but also others. I mean, you know, there's a lot of workplaces that you go, you know, you need to have this voice and where you spend a good portion of your life.
There's no doubt about it. Without a voice, there is no choice. And to pick up on another point that Kelly was mentioning, you know, when you look at the public sector across the United States, the folks that have benefited really the most from unionism, it's been the women and it's been people of color. And so, you know, if they want to turn back the clock, that's exactly what's going to happen here unless we really implement this internal organizing model that we've talked about in the program today. We need to do that. If we remain Teamster strong, we can withstand, you know, the Janus decision and continue to do the things that are important to us. We can't let them think that they're going to win with this Supreme Court case.
Right. No, and again, it takes me back to, and one of the things that, you know, we've kind of been dancing around a little bit is, you know, what the future is going to look like for union members. You know, I go back and, you know, I remember as a kid when my mother passed away, I moved in with my grandparents. And there was a guy who lived catty corner that my grandfather said when I moved in, I catch you playing with that kid, that guy's grandparents, I'm going to beat you. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do it. It was years later, I asked him why. You know, why was that? Turns out the guy who lived at catty corner across the street had crossed a picket line like 50 years ago, crossed a railroad strike, and it was completely ostracized by society. And there's part of me that thinks that, you know, maybe this is where we're heading back to, because I've said for a long time, I wish union members would hold on to their union card like NRA members hold on to their NRA card.
Well, you know, when you talk about the person who passed away many of our contracts have different leave provisions, including bereavement leave. And so those kinds of things will be gone as well, unless we can remain Teamster strong and keep those kinds of provisions in our contracts. So whether it's leave, the shift that you work, the ability to take time off to go care for a family member, the overtime that maybe you work on occasion, the great health care that you have today, and hopefully a decent pension for retirement purposes, all those things are on the line here. But we don't need to be depressed, but we need to take this opportunity to work with each other to be stronger than we are today. And I mean, that's the important clarion call here. You know, we are not going to dodge another bullet. There's no doubt about it. And so if we don't act, we have no one to blame but ourselves. So we need to seize the moment here. This is a great moment in time for public sector unionism in America.
I'm right there with you. Kelly, did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I appreciate the call. Thanks so much. You know, before we wrap this all up, I mean, you know, some of the things that I wanted to, you know, kind of make sure we end on is a very positive note. Like you said, because this isn't the end. I mean, to me, there's an opportunity here to take this and begin getting out in the streets and preaching the good word, saying, look, and I've told my story a number of times. Look, I grew up in a housing project. We were where they put the socioeconomic ladder on top of. And when you saw people get union jobs, their lives got better. You know, there was food at the end of the month. Maybe the kids got a used bike, better clothes, and then maybe eventually getting out of the projects altogether. That message of union job equals better life has to come back.
Well, you're absolutely right. This is our moment. We have that opportunity. We shouldn't be swayed by, you know, the marketing that our opponents are using or the things that the president talks about when he talks about tax reform and how it's going to benefit working people. If he really wants to benefit working people, give us the right to organize without interference, give us the right to collectively bargain, and we can set our own rules and what our return on work should be.
Yeah, what's always interesting to me, Michael, is the very people who keep telling us that they want government out of our lives, get government off my back, Michael, are the very ones who want to impose government on us and our ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions.
Yeah, you know, we make a big stink, or some people in the administration do, about the elections in Venezuela, but they could care less about the elections that occur in this country democratically, where working people decide whether or not they want a union. And once the union is in there, they're trying to take that union away. That's not right. That's not the America that we want to live in.
I'm right there with you. Last words, Michael.
Well, I thank everyone for participating today. Take it to the streets, take it in the workplace. Let's build the Teamster power even stronger than it is today.
Good stuff. Michael, I appreciate you taking time for us. I appreciate the hard work that you guys are doing, and best of luck to you and your members.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate the time today.
Thank you so much, Michael Filler, the director of the Public Services Division there at the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. And look, you know, as I've been saying, at the end of the day, this is going to come down to us. It's going to come down to members standing shoulder to shoulder in solidarity with one another. And look, this generation rediscovering solidarity goes back to that age-old question of which side are we going to be on? Now's the time to ask and answer that question. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you know. And I'm sure we'll be doing this again in the near future. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.